Welcome to Reclaiming Womanhood, where we encourage you to boldly become the woman God has perfectly designed you to be. I am your host, Allison Powers, and today we are diving into another powerful topic that will empower you through God's Word to go against the grain of today's culture, reclaim womanhood, and walk it out as moms, wives, and sisters in Christ. Let's get into today's show. Hello and welcome to another episode of Reclaiming Womanhood with Allison Powers. I am so glad you're here. Today is episode number 17, and today we're going to talk about the real pandemic that is killing our culture. But before we dive into today's topic, I want to thank those of you who have been leaving reviews in Apple Podcasts. I thank you so much for that because that is such an encouragement to me. When I read those podcasts, it reminds me that I am doing the work that God has set forth for me. Sometimes behind this microphone, it can be a little lonely. And sometimes when I do very touchy topics like the one we're going to talk about today, I can receive a lot of kickback. And I know that that's okay because I know that that's what Jesus is calling me to do. And he told us that these types of things were going to happen. So that's all right. And when you guys leave those reviews, it really, really helps me stay encouraged. And in addition to that, it helps Apple Podcasts know that these podcasts are valuable and that they will show them to more eyes. Okay, so today's topic, we are talking about the real pandemic, which is killing our culture. And I say pandemic, quote unquote, and that is the abortion industry, the number of abortions. So I just want to compare some numbers really quick before we dive into today's topic. Okay, so if you haven't noticed, we are in the midst of a global pandemic, quote unquote. And in this nation, as of today, I record these a little bit early, so if you listen to this podcast and you look up the numbers, you could be like, oh, she's not correct. Okay, well, I'm recording this. It's still early September. So as of today, it is 187,000 deaths due to COVID. Now, I'm not even taking into consideration the newest thing that the CDC has put out, that a lot of those deaths, 90-something percent of them, were due to the fact that there was other underlying symptoms like pneumonia, things that do actually kill people and can kill that group of people every year. It causes a lot of deaths. So I'm not even going to go there. We're going to give the COVID pandemic all those 187,000 deaths. Well, let's assume that that's an accurate number, okay? This pandemic that we are facing that has shut down our nation and that has caused such fear and division in our nation, okay? 187,000 deaths. And I think it's sad. It's awful. I wish it didn't happen. And I do pray for those who are affected by it. So I'm not wanting to come across, I don't want you to send me hate mail saying that I don't believe COVID is real. I do, but I am very skeptical of the numbers. And I do think there's something even more important that we need to put as much energy into as we are into this COVID. We are putting so much energy into standing up for masks and standing up for all these things. People are so passionate. Oh, they're so passionate about it. And there's something that we are being completely distracted from that is a much more, that is killing far more humans in this nation. Okay, that is the abortion industry. So let's talk about the abortion industry. How many abortions are there a year? Do you have any idea? I want you to think of a number. Since Roe v. Wade in 1973, okay, since 1973, there have been 60 million abortions. 60 million human lives ended due to abortion since Roe v. Wade in 1973. And then if you do the math then, because you might think, okay, that's a lot of years. That's okay, 60 million over that many years. If you do the math and you figure out how many that is per year, that is on average. Now, this is an average, okay? An average means that some years it was higher, some years it was lower. On average, that would be 1.2 million abortions a year. 1.2 million lives lost, taken a year. That is a pandemic that is killing our nation. And guess what? It is something that we can absolutely control. But we have been spending more time and energy focusing how to stop COVID, right? We've been spending more time and energy fighting with people about masks and ignoring the abortion industry that is just flourishing right now. There are more crisis pregnancies this year because of the shutdowns that we need to be attending to. If you haven't listened to the podcast last week where I talked about the importance of reclaiming womanhood, I encourage you to do so because I believe that one way that we can absolutely lower the number of abortions is raising our kids intentionally to have a firm foundation and to know how and where they stand in the abortion industry. A quick background, I am a post-abortive mom. I've shared my story before. I am a Christian and I live in the light. My history is no secret. I am forgiven. I am redeemed. But it has been a process to go through there. And one thing I can tell, you can read my whole story at allisonpowers.com/my story. I'm not going to give all the details today. But one thing I can tell you is this. If a young person, I was 19 years old, finds themselves in a crisis pregnancy situation and they do not have a firm foundation, a firm belief one way or the other, it is very, very easy to get the answers that you want and to get things done very quickly and hide things and just conveniently get your life back on the right track. It is very easy. As a 19-year-old, I didn't have a firm foundation one way or the other. I was not firmly against it or firmly for it. I really didn't know where I stood. Do you know where you stand? And do you know why you stand there? Do your kids know where they stand? Do your teens know where they stand and why they stand that way? Because if we don't teach them and encourage them to stand for life, we send them off to college, the college will fill that void with choice. They will fill that void with pro-choice. It is an inoculation that is starting at a very young age. The sex education in our schools is funded, not every single school, but many schools, by Planned Parenthood. Why? Why does Planned Parenthood care to educate our kids on sex education? Why? Because Planned Parenthood is a business, you guys. We must not forget that. This is a business. They make their money by selling birth control, by giving abortions. That is how they make their money. So to teach children from a young age that a baby is not a baby until it is born, it otherwise is a clump of cells, why do they teach that? And then they teach the child that if you are pregnant, you can do these different things, including the pill that you can take, an abortion, you can have the baby, and so on and so forth. But it also encourages kids that unless they are completely ready to have the baby, not to, because it's actually doing a disservice to that child by having a baby when you aren't financially ready and you aren't married. So, okay, from a very young age, kids are being taught this. We have to, as parents, have those hard conversations with our kids, talk to them about abortion, what abortion is, and where they should stand on it and why they stand for it. Ultimately, they have to make their own mind up, but we certainly shouldn't leave it up to the schools to help them make their mind up. That is our job, moms and dads. We have got to take responsibility for that. Okay, so some people might be listening to this and be like, well, that girl has no right talking out against abortions. You might think I have no right to be pro-life. But I believe that because of my past, though it was not a pretty one, gives me more insight into the perverted and damaging nature of the abortion industry. So today I'm going to unashamedly speak out to this, and I pray that it might equip you to do the same. Now, when I say speak out against it, I don't say just like plaster your Facebook with controversial topics, because if you haven't noticed, social media right now is such a hot spot for argument. People aren't going on there for their minds to be changed. They're going on there to be to fight and to argue and to make their voice heard, which is fine. Okay. We live in a free country with free speech. I do believe that every side should be able to speak what they believe. That is what free speech is in this nation. And I believe that to be the case, but I do not think it's the most effective place to speak out against the pro-choice movement. I don't think it's the most effective place. I don't think you're wrong if you do it, but I think we should consider in our minds more creative and effective ways to defend the unborn babies whose lives are being taken every single day. Thousands a day, you guys. Thousands a day. As I record this podcast, hundreds of lives are being taken right now. All right, so today, I'm going to be bringing forth some of the most common arguments from the pro-choice, and from here on out, I'm going to call them the pro-abortion left side of things, and then how you can respond to them, okay? Because I believe, like the case is for a lot of things, we believe a certain thing. We believe it firmly because we know it's right. We think we believe it, but we can't defend it. And I think it's so important to learn how to defend what we believe in, be it your faith, be it pro-life movement, be it the fact that you want to be a vegan, whatever it is, know why you're doing it and defend and be able to stand up for it. You don't have to be mean about it, but just be knowledgeable. A lot of times we are quick to stand up on a certain bandwagon just because we like the people who are on the bandwagon and we want to join them and we trust them. That's great. That's great, but we need to know and we need to be able to defend it. So that's what we're going to talk about today. All right, so argument number one that we hear from the pro-abortion side of things is that it is not a human life. Okay, we kind of touched upon this earlier. Some people will argue it's not a human life till there's a heart rate, till there are brain waves, until the first breath. nowadays. There are 10 states in our United States of America that allow abortion to birth, until birth. You guys, if you can't tell me that's a human, like, that's murder. Okay. Okay. But there's nothing to argue here, whether the abortion takes place in the first month or if it takes place in the ninth month. There is nothing to argue when life begins. It's not an argument, it's a fact. When the sperm fertilizes a female cell, what results? A human baby. A human baby. If you leave that to grow on its own and develop, what will be the result? A human baby. Okay? That is when life begins. Right then and there, this is scientific. This is biology. This is science. So many of these pro-abortion signs I see is, I believe in science. Well, and then you see on the bottom of these signs in people's yards, women's rights are human rights. There are so many things wrong with that sign. If you believe that science is true, you believe that a sperm, this is the way it is. You believe that a sperm fertilizes an egg and then that results in a human being. And then you go on to see the women's rights are human rights. It is not a human right for a woman to kill a baby. That's not a human right. You're not giving that human that is growing inside of you the right. This is just, listening to people defend this just makes my head hurt. Okay. So this is what happens at fertilization. At fertilization, what takes place immediately? Yes, poof, you don't have a baby at fertilization, but these things are determined immediately. The eye color, the skin color, the hair color, the intelligence, the personality, the facial features, the gender, those are decided immediately. This unique thing that will never be created again, never again will there be one just like it, is created in that instant. In that instant, those things are decided. You were decided. Your hair color, your eye color, the way your personality is, was decided the instant that sperm met that egg. And thank God your mom chose to keep you. And I'm thankful for that. And I'm thankful you're here. And I'm thankful you're listening. I'm thankful that you had the right to live life. The pro-choice movement wants to work so hard to dehumanize the growing baby inside of the women. Why? Because then, when you dehumanize it, it will justify in the mind of that mom in the crisis situation why she can conveniently get her life back to normal. Because it's not really a baby, right? That is the argument that I hung on, that I justified with, was that it was just a clump of cells. It's just a clump of cells. So I can just get rid of that clump of cells. It's just cells. It's not. But when we really think about it, when we don't inoculate ourselves with the lies, when we really think logically, like, I was a smart kid in school. I did very well in school. I got very good grades. I'm smarter than that. I know that, but I believed the lie to justify it. Okay? What happens when we take that clump of cells and we let them grow? What will happen? A human baby. A human baby will be born. Okay? That is what happens. This argument that dehumanizes the growing baby inside you ignores the fact that this clump of cells, quote unquote, has a heartbeat at 3.5 weeks, has brain waves at 6 weeks, hears the mother's voice in the second trimester. And at 23 weeks, I've seen some miraculous pregnancies, births even in my close realm of friends, of babies who were born as early as 23 weeks and with medical intervention can sustain life outside of the womb. They're viable. At 27 weeks, they're viable to live outside of the womb. It's amazing. It's amazing, yet we're killing babies at that age, at that gestation period. We're taking their lives. Some argue that because a baby does not have brain waves yet, that it is not technically alive. Therefore, the life can be taken. Now, this argument, this brings it back to them. We just talked about this. The brain waves happen at 6 weeks. So if we're using this argument to support our choice for an abortion, then let me ask this question. This is what I would ask the mom who's contemplating this. Again, in a very nice way, you guys. When I'm picturing these interactions, I'm picturing these hundreds and thousands of female college students that rally on campuses and scream and shout, "My body, my choice, my uterus, my choice." That's what I'm picturing. I'm not picturing the scared mom in the crisis situation, because they're not the ones screaming on the sidelines right now. Okay. I'm picturing those very obnoxious ones that are screaming. And I want to tell them, I want to ask them this. Okay. And I do pray for those moms who are in those crisis situations. I pray that they find the right help. They find the right advice, because like I said, it's very easy to find the wrong advice that will lead you down the wrong trail. Okay. And what I would ask those people who say, no brainwaves, not a human, let me ask you this. Have you ever been in a room, in a hospital room with someone that was brain dead? Have you? I have. If the loved one would have known that her loved one who was laying on that bed without brainwaves would get brainwaves in 6 weeks, do you think she would have pulled that plug? No. It was the hardest, hardest decision that that person had to make. The hardest decision. Why? Because she loved that person. And she saw that person. And she saw that that person that was someone that would leave her life forever. But because the pro-abortion movement dehumanized it, it says that it's not a human. It doesn't have brainwaves. We think it's fine to kill it. We have no problem pulling that plug. If my friend would have known that that person would have brainwaves guaranteed in 6 weeks, that plug would have never been pulled. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Let's be real, people. Come on. This argument is absurd. Here is my belief. I believe that many women who elect the abortion, they are not educated on the development of the life growing inside of them. They're also not educated on the abortion process, which is why crisis pregnancy centers are so important. If you have, and I know you do, find the local crisis pregnancy center in your area. Find out what they stand for. Make sure they stand for life, which they likely do, and support them. Support them in any way. It could be volunteering. It could be financially. Support them. Because they are doing a very important work of educating women. They don't judge women. They don't bully them. They don't push them one way or the other, but they educate them. And if I were educated on the process that would take place inside of my uterus, and if I would be educated and almost, you know, I needed a little smack across the face, though they're very gentle in the way they talk to women, I wouldn't have made the decision I made. Okay, argument number two that you hear often, my body, my choice. Now, I agree. I am a woman. I want the right to choose what happens to my body. I totally agree with that. That's why I am for pro-choice for vaccines. I want to be able to choose whether or not I get vaccinated. I do. So I am total agreement. But let me ask you this. How many heartbeats are there when you are pregnant? Yes, there are two. Or if you have twins, there are three or four. If you have triplets, you get the pattern, okay? When we are pregnant, it is not just our body anymore. There are two bodies. One belongs to me and one belongs the other. And my personal bodily rights end where another person's bodily rights begin. I do not have the right to harm another person's body. And it also should be noted that when a pregnant woman is actually murdered brutally, the murderer is charged with a double homicide. How is that? Why are we using a double standard then? Why in the case is the baby's life considered in that situation, but in the case of when a mother wants to take her own baby's life, it is not. All right, argument number three, life does not begin until a person can be independent. You hear a lot of this. I watch some of these videos of these young people rallying and shouting things. And when they're actually questioned why they stand for pro-choice, they say things like, life doesn't begin until that person can be independent. Well, if that is the case, if you are a mom, you realize that your child is not alive then on that theory until they're, you know, capable of being independent, likely until they're 18 years old, okay? In all seriousness, though, even after the baby is born, they are still not independent. They are dependent and they will not survive without the care of another human being. So that argument isn't valid. So does the argument also agree with the fact that, you know, if a mom has the baby and it's not working out, that she can just take the life of her 3-month-old and be like, oh, this isn't working out for me? No, that would be considered homicide. Okay? Do we get this? This is a very weak argument. Our dependency does not show that we are inhuman. It does not show our inhumanity, but much the opposite. It shows that how we as humans are designed to be interdependent. We are designed for community. We are designed for fellowship. We are designed to be taught and to be dependent upon our parents who are designed by God to lead us and guide us and raise us up. Okay? That does not show that inhumanity. That shows the humanity that is inside of us. All right, argument number four, this is a powerful one. And this is one where a lot of pro-abortion people like to rest on this argument and use this as the excuse for why all abortion should be legal, and that is rape and incest, life of the mother. This is a popular go-to for abortion advocates. So the Guttmacher Institute, which is a research arm for Planned Parenthood, has these statistics on there. So I'm telling you that because where these statistics come from are actually a pro-abortion website. At the very bottom of the website, it says abortion is a necessary medical or health care or something like that. They are pro-choice. So this is where I'm getting these statistics from. And it shows on that website that about 3% to as little as 1% of all abortions that take place per year are due to incest, rape, life of the mother. So what does that mean? 97 to 99% of those abortions are chosen out of convenience. But pro-abortion advocates try to focus on this minority to make the majority rule for all. But here's my, I do still have an answer for if it was 90% rape and incest. I still have an answer for that, and that is this. Is the solution in abortion? Is that really the solution? Well, let's think about this right now. When a person is raped, who is the criminal? The criminal is the perpetrator, is the rapist. That is a criminal. And unfortunately, in our legislature, in our legal system, we do not have a severe enough penalty for the average rapist. The average rapist gets 5 years in prison, you guys. 5 years in prison. I believe that our solution should begin in two places. Number one, we need to increase the severity of that punishment for the rapist, because what's going to happen after that 5 years is up? They will likely repeat offense. We need to deal with that in a much better way. And number two, if you didn't listen to my last episode, I'm going to keep telling you to go back. We need to raise our men to be men. We need to raise men not to sexualize women. Now, I'm not saying it's all the men's fault why rape happens. I'm not saying that, because women have totally bought into the sexualization, promiscuous lifestyle, and believe that they find their value by sexualizing themselves towards men. Like, you guys, or completely the opposite, that men are irrelevant and they don't need men to survive in life. This is all twisted and wrong. Bottom line is this: we need to raise our kids, both our boys and our girls, to stand firm on truth and to understand what their role is as God designed it for them. Men were not raised to sexualize women to be sex objects, sex machines, and women were not raised to be sex objects. Sex is a beautiful thing that should happen within the confines of marriage. And if you want to have the best sex of your life, wait till you're married. I wish I could go back. Okay, so next thing. The baby, like I said, is the innocent bystander in the situation. The baby is not the criminal, but yet we take the life of the baby. Okay, we take the life of the baby. That is the punishment that happens. The baby dies. The baby doesn't choose how he or she enters the world, and the baby is then sentenced to death, but not by its choice. It's not the baby's fault. Okay, abortion still kills. So if we think that, okay, well, a woman is raped and then she, or incest, and she, because she's pregnant, that she will be healed from that trauma by taking the life of the baby. But what the abortion industry does not tell you and does not want you to know is the trauma, the emotional, mental, and physical trauma that you will have after having an abortion. Now the woman has to deal with the rape that she experienced and the loss of her baby. And that is a severe, severe loss. A loss is still a loss. An abortion is not going to heal the victim who has experienced this. If anything, it's only going to cause more pain. There have been studies actually done, let me tell you this, on rape victims who chose life, who chose to keep their child. And that child, they say, actually became a healing point for them in their past situation. It actually helped to heal them from their past experience. Now, I know every situation is unique, but I just want to encourage you and just open your eyes and hopefully open the eyes of someone who's taking the stance that that is not the solution, that only causes more harm and damage. Women need healing from that. Women need to deal with that choice that they make. But the abortion industry does not tell you that. The abortion industry wants you to think it's a quick, easy thing. Wash your hands of it. Move on with life. But guess what? I have news for you. You are a human, and you will, at some point of your life, whether you pent up that guilt, if you pent up that secret inside of you that you've had an abortion and you just let it eat away inside, it will surface itself in some way, shape, or form. Argument number five, Plan B is not an abortion. Plan B is the morning after pill, okay? Now, any drug designed to kill or disrupt and destroy the growing baby within a mother is called an abortifacient. Plan B is an abortifacient, and that, in my eyes, is an abortion, because without that pill, now a lot of times a mom, when they take this, they don't know that they're, whether or not they're pregnant, but just in case they take that pill, well, guess what? Now, this is an abortion in my eyes, because, and I'm not saying this to make someone feel guilty at all, I'm just saying this to help you educate your kids, because a lot of times women might run to that pill and thinking, well, it's fine. I didn't really have an abortion. Well, you may have been pregnant and now you're not. And that is, in essence, taking the life of this child who may have had the chance to come into this world. Same with the pill. Actually, I learned this when I started to get involved with the pregnancy center, that the way the pill works, the one that you take every day, that's how that works. It actually thins the uterine wall. So it doesn't prevent the sperm from fertilizing the egg. It actually doesn't. The sperm can still fertilize the egg. I was blown away when I heard this. But it actually thins the uterine wall. And that's why a lot of women take it, because they want a lighter period. And that also does that for a woman. And it thins the uterine wall so that that egg and sperm cannot attach to it. Therefore, it cannot develop. And it will just be flushed out, you know, with the period cycle. So that's just something to consider when you're educating your children and yourself on the what an abortion is and isn't. Bottom line is, you know, the sex education is not teaching children to be abstinent, not teaching children not to have sex at all. It's actually doing quite the opposite, and it's showing you how to not get pregnant or how to take care of that pregnancy if it so be. I don't believe that what we should be teaching our kids is the solutions for how to avoid a pregnancy. We should be teaching them the sanctity that you can find if you wait till you get married. Yep, I sound old fashioned, but guess what? This way is not working. I've lived it. I've experienced it. Trust me, I wish I would have done differently. And I hope that there are voices or there are ears listening who think that this is old fashioned, but you're young and you've never heard someone say this, but I wish I could go back and I wish that I would have waited. You guys, there's so much baggage that you carry when you don't wait. Wait. All of this can be avoided. All of this can be avoided if you just wait. Okay. So number six reason that you will often hear is abortion is an essential healthcare. It's often categorized as an essential healthcare. That's what's at the bottom of that website, by the way. The Guttmacher Institute, which is the research arm for Planned Parenthood. When a healthcare physician takes an oath, part of that oath is to do no harm to patients. So this is not healthcare. Healthcare saves lives and abortion kills lives. The two are not equal. An abortionist harms patients. That is not healthcare. Doctors save lives. They do not, that is the oath that they take. This is not healthcare. Last but not least, another argument that you oftentimes hear is that men cannot talk about abortion because they don't have uteruses. Now, I think that more men need to stand up to be pro-life, because guess what? Every child has a father and a mother. Every child has a father and a mother. And roughly 50% of all babies that are aborted are men, are boys. More men need to stand up for this. I think more men need to speak out against this. And I hear there are some awesome male voices in the culture that speak out against this. And I just think it is so powerful. It's so powerful to hear a man speak up and speak for the life of an unborn child. It's a beautiful thing. We need more men to speak out against it. That's my answer to that. All right, you guys, those are seven of the most common arguments that we hear from the pro-abortion industry, and what my response would be to those things. Now, I want to remind you, yes, I got a little fired up today, but when we do talk to people about it, if you're talking to just a group of people on a college campus, or you're encountering a group of young minds that are completely just blatantly casting out these lies, yes, you need to be firm and kind, but firm in your responses. But if you're talking to a mom in a crisis situation, you need to be gentle. You need to be kind. You need to encourage her and point her, if you can, and you can, to a crisis pregnancy center. They will educate and they will encourage women. And actually, in a couple weeks, in the month of October, I will be interviewing the director of the local pregnancy center in our area. And I'm really excited for that interview, because she is going to really highlight what a pregnancy center does, and how it truly, truly actually empowers women. We want a women empowerment. It is not through the abortion system. Most women who have abortions deal with so much emotional trauma and damage because of the choice of their abortion. It's similar to PTSD, which is the post-traumatic stress disorder, very similar to that. So if you are a mom who has had an abortion and you are recognizing some symptoms in your life that might be similar to PTSD, I want to tell you that it's likely because of your abortion. And I'm not telling you that to make you feel bad. I'm telling you that because I'm telling you, you need to go find healing and closure in that. And you need to be healed from that. And you also need to know that, I'm going to end with this, that you are not defined by your choice to have had abortion. You are not defined by that. That is not a guilt you have to carry for the rest of your life. Jesus came to this earth to live a perfect life and die the life of a sinner for every single sin that he knew that we would commit. And he still chose for you to be born on this earth, even though he knew you were going to make that choice. Do you realize the power in that? Like, God, I believe that God created me. He chose for me to walk this earth, even though God is omniscient. He knows all things. He knew that Allison was going to be an idiot and take the very windy road to find salvation. And I sure did. And he knew that I was going to choose to take the life of my child. And yet he still created me. And Jesus knew that. And he still went to the cross for me. He still went to the cross for you. And when you can accept the fact that Jesus went to the cross for you and that you need him and that you can accept his forgiveness, like the gift is there. The gift is there for you, but you need to accept that. And when you can accept that and move on, you will be free. You will be truly free. It's funny. The abortion movement really tries to sell freedom to women. Freedom to women by getting abortions. But really, what really happens, because I've seen both sides of it, you become enslaved by that decision. You become enslaved by that guilt. When you really come to realize, did I realize it right away? No. You know when I realized it? When I became guilty, when I felt truly guilty of it, was when I held my baby in my arms, my daughter. That's when I really realized what I did. There's a life. There's a life growing inside of a woman. We got to stop lying to our youth. We've got to do what we can to stop funding Planned Parenthood. You guys, it's our tax dollars going there. We have to do our part, and you can do your part by being aware. You can do your part by talking and encouraging that crisis pregnant mom. You can do your part by accepting Christ's forgiveness, getting the healing you need, and sharing your story, because it will heal others. All right, you guys, on that note, I'm going to leave you with that today. I pray that you are encouraged. I pray that you know the forgiveness that you have in your Savior, who is Jesus Christ, and only you can accept that forgiveness. No one can do it for you. That's the step that you have to make. And I will be praying for you this week. All right, guys, I love you, and I hope you have a blessed week. If you haven't already, please go leave me a 5-star review over in Apple Podcasts and share this. Share this podcast with someone who needs to hear this, who needs to be encouraged. And if you have any ideas for more podcast topics that you'd like to hear me talk about, please email me at allison@allisonpowers.com. Again, that is allison@allisonpowers.com. Have a super awesome, blessed week. Bye for now. For more encouragement and to find out where else we can connect online, visit allisonpowers.com. Thanks for listening.